Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Truth About Trucking, live, hosted by Alan Smith, a 30-year OTR veteran, business entrepreneur, and motor carrier transportation consultant, specializing in assisting students and new drivers, and pushing forward to raise the standards of the trucking industry. And now, live from beautiful Citrus County, Florida, here's your host, Alan Smith.
And add us to your favorites. Truth About Trucking Live across the World Wide Web with listeners all across the globe. And at the end of the show, I want to share some information I received from one of our listeners who happens to be a staff sergeant in the U.S. military and currently serving over in the Middle East. And we will pay tribute to all the men and women in the armed forces. So a little something special for those soldiers on tonight's show. Sometimes they can listen to us live. They catch us on the archives. Their tour of duty and enlistment is coming to an end, and they're looking at truck driving as a career when they get back home. So do a little something special for them at the end of the show this evening. And as we keep an eye on Hurricane Earl swirling around out there in the Atlantic, possibly heading for the Carolinas and Virginia, probably no possibly about it. I think that's where it's going. Hurricane warning issued today for tomorrow, Thursday, for that area of the U.S. So keeping our fingers crossed that Earl decides to shift more to the northeast and head out to sea. But definitely looks like there's going to be some something happening there up in the Carolinas and Virginia. So we'll be watching that closely. Our show this evening, Trucking Cargo Theft, the problem and the solution, big problem for truck drivers and the industry alike. And in the September issue of Truckers News Magazine, once again, there's a great write-up about this problem. And joining this evening are our special guest, Todd Dills. He's a senior editor for Overdrive and Truckers News Magazines. And Max Cavidra, senior editor of Randall Riley Publishing. And Todd also edits the Severe Service Quarterly Supplement to Overdrive Magazine and blogs about trucking-related topics every day over at overdriveonline.com/channel19. And he has an extensive background in creative writing and literary publishing and journalism. And Max has more than 30 years of experience as a business journalist, 8 years spent researching, editing, and writing about the trucking industry, and he is a graduate of the University of Missouri School of Journalism. And both of our guests, along with many others over at Truckers News, have put together a very informative article about the alarming rate that truck cargo theft has reached in this country. So if you'd like to be a part of the show, our call-in number 347-826-9170. And Donna's with us this evening as well, and we're all going to talk about the problem and the solution to trucking cargo theft with our special guest Todd Dills and Max Cavidra this evening on Truth About Trucking Live, coming up right after this short break.
As an owner-operator, you understand the importance of saving every dollar wherever you can, and insurance is one of the biggest expenses a business owner can face. RigQuote.com works with over 50 of the top insurance carriers across the U.S. to bring you the best insurance coverage at the best price. If you're an owner-operator, small fleet owner, freight broker, freight forwarder, Whatever your trucking business entails, RigQuote.com can save you money, and in today's economy, we all know how important that is. They also offer a wide selection of discounts that can even save you more of your hard-earned money. Discounts like having already been an owner-operator, business experience discount, a CDL discount, radius of operation discount, and they can even take care of your truck insurance filings. You can get a price quote in 5 minutes or less right from their website, RigQuote.com, or give them a call toll-free at 888-701-1795. RigQuote.com, making trucking insurance simplified. And be sure to tell them that Alan Smith sent you.
RigQuote.com, one of our sponsors here at Truth About Trucking Live. Good people, good company. Check them out if you need your insurance needs taken care of. And truck cargo theft, big problem. So what are the solutions? Our special guests, Todd Dills and Max Cavedra. Todd and Max, let me get you open here. And Donna, you're with us also, right?
I'm here.
You're hanging there. Okay, mics are open. Todd and Max, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hey, this is Todd here.
Hi, this is Max. Happy to be here.
Todd there and Max here. Okay, we're going to just let this be an open discussion. I mean, we'll direct some questions to each one individually, but just feel free to jump in at any time. That's generally how we do it. It's just kind of like a round table. We're all just sitting around talking. But
sure.
Todd, let's start with you. And, of course, like I said, open discussion, so just jump in any time. But this cargo theft problem, your cover story for this month's issue of Truckers News, big bold letters, stealing us blind. And I tell you, when you look at the numbers, stealing us blind, man, you're not kidding, are you?
No, it's pretty serious. And since between 2008 and 2009, it really jumped up in most of the areas that are kind of hot spots for it. Florida, it was kind of flat between those two, but you know, like California, Texas, New Jersey, Illinois, all across the board, all of them were way up. California was almost twice as much as 2008. So, it's a pretty serious problem for sure.
Well, I noticed in your article there, y'all even have a map there where the hot spots are, and boy, you go up there, up in the northeast, and really along the whole eastern seaboard, that's definitely pretty hot spot up through there.
Sure, I mean cargo theft happens where the freight is, and where the freight's changing hands a lot, so it's. And I had one of the insurance investigators I thought to sort of describe it as. Centered, take a major port, the Missouri, or a major city where a lot of air freights go in. Maybe if it's in like Atlanta, and that's where you're gonna have the incidents taking place. A lot of distribution warehouses, a lot of intermodal facilities, and various and sundry other occasions where the freight is loaded and sitting for a while. You know that kind of thing. A lot of the thefts are directly from distribution warehouses. A lot of them, though, and this is kind of where we came in on it, and most drivers out there would come in on a lot of it happens on the road too. You know, out in the truck stuff or unsecured lots and stuff. So.
Well, and also this is Max Cavedra. One of the things that was pointed out to me by one of the law enforcement people is he pointed out that this is a opportunity crime, and with the slowing economy, there are a lot of new bad guys entering this area of cargo theft. They see an opportunity, and. Maybe in the past, a lot of the thefts may have been for luxury goods and expensive electronic items and things like that. Well, now we're seeing thefts of everything you can imagine, food products, diapers, beef jerky, toothpaste, you name it. If somebody needs something, then those products will be targeted and found out among the tractor trailers out there.
Yeah, that's yeah, Max, I was going to bring that up because I knew you played a big part when researching the entire scope of the theft problem. So let's elaborate more on this. I mean, and I was going to bring up the economy. I mean, that really is being a main thrust behind this thing right now. Just like you said, I mean, they're not just going after the electronic goods, but I mean, just like you said, the diapers and just the things they need to get by through this poor economy that we're going through.
Well, that's true, and the thieves range all over the map from just local hoodlums who, like I said, need some products, or there's a market for some products, or somebody in the neighborhood needs something. They'll go out and find some place where they can take maybe a box or a pallet or part of a shipment, and it ranges all the way up to Cuban up from Florida who are taking advantage of this as well and seeing a great opportunity.
Yeah, they're more of a kind of those guys. We're talking about the Cuban range. They're more of the organized types, the sort of.
Exactly.
So they'll be sending out like 5-man teams into the U.S. interior, just looking for opportunity. Sure.
Yeah, because that's a good point, because it's not just a 1- and 2-man operation going along here. I mean, there's some pretty big sophisticated stuff going on out there.
Definitely.
Right. I mean, as far as like the teams that you're saying and everything, I mean, they've come a long way in their technology in hunting these things down and knowing exactly what's there and how to get it and everything. Now, how are they getting into these warehouses and stuff like that? I mean, there's usually security and stuff around there.
Well, that can range. In many cases, it might be an inside job. There might be somebody working in the facility or nearby who has access or knows the movements of people, employees in the warehouse or the complex, and the movement of trucks coming into the area. And in some cases, I've heard from some of the people I talk with that some people might just know an area warehouse facility that is a good spot, has a good load in, and has maybe just unloaded, and they'll go through the roof. They'll cut into the roof and go into some of these facilities. That doesn't happen very often, but it is happening. That if they know there's cargo down in that building that is valuable, they'll find a way to get it. And especially if it's there over a weekend, they'll have time to make their theft.
Well, one thing I noticed on there in your September issue here, Todd, is y'all had a story or two about some of the drivers that are involved, and one of them that I don't have it here in front of me, but I remember reading something about like a driver being approached and being offered $50,000 to do such a thing, and then of course he gets caught.
Yeah. Well, in that case, the driver wasn't caught. The driver actually was involved in the eventual sting on the people that offered him money for it. I mean, and that's the thing about talking with a lot of law enforcement people. You know, they stress over and over again that drivers are kind of the eyes and ears for all this, for them out there on the road. For catching a lot of people that do this, a lot of the organized sort of teams that do this are, in a lot of cases, I mean, we've talked about kind of warehouse burglary and you know, stealing trailers off warehouse lots and stuff like that. But and a lot of this is happening out there on the road, and a lot of the law enforcement people, like I said, stress that anytime a theft gang is approaches you, because that's what they do. You know, they offer you money for your load, and a lot of money in some cases. And in this case, the case that you're mentioning, it was was a driver, Alabama driver who was approached, I think, in somewhere in Virginia, near Roanoke, I believe, at a truck stop. He was, you know, what happened was he, you know, like I said, we talked about opportunity crime. He had been on the CB in a truck stop because he was out of money. And he was going to sell that CB. And he was going to sell, you know, it's an unfortunate case for him, obviously, but by doing that, you know, you got the wrong guy in that area. He sees this opportunity, comes over, and he buys the CB. And then he says, hey, you know.
Yeah. He just broadcasting his problems right across the air.
Right. And this, so this guy, you know, came over thinking he would take advantage, or thinking he might be able to take advantage, offered him, you know, a large sum of money. And this, the driver did what these law enforcement guys always say, you know, he didn't actually immediately say no. He took the guy's number, you know, told him he would think about it, right? This guy's got like a $100,000 load of copper on flat.
Yeah.
And he took the guy's number. He didn't say no. He wasn't gonna, you know, he wasn't really thinking about stealing it. I mean, he was thinking about giving it up. He eventually got in touch. He found his way through contacting folks to the Memphis Cargo Theft Task Force. And they're kind of multi-jurisdictional force. They cover all the surrounding states around Memphis, and sometimes branch out because they're FBI led, so they can cross state lines in their work. And basically, they worked with this driver and his carrier, and set up a sting on these guys in West Memphis, and eventually caught them and prosecuted them. So in that case worked out, but. They do say with you know, just be in touch with law enforcement, you know, if you're hearing things of this nature happening, you can be a big part of helping solve the problem for sure.
Yeah, well, Donna, we were doing a little bit more research on that, since research is your deal, but well, when you look at the amount of dollars being stolen out there is
up to $30 billion. I read. I mean, is that an accurate figure? $30 billion?
Well, that's part of the situation. No one really knows how much the problem is, the size of the theft. For various reasons, there have been no nationwide network set up to report all the different activities. There are different descriptions of the type of crimes that take place that are called different things in different places. There are some areas of the country that are less active in this area. Maybe they don't know that they have such a problem. So only until this year was the FBI really closely involved in the sense of keeping statistics in this problem.
Right.
Beginning in January, they finally set up a criminal code number for reporting these kinds of activities. But up until that point, it was kind of haphazard with some networks and some databases around the country, but it was sort of a hit and miss as far as knowing exactly how many thefts occurred and the dollar volume. So going forward, that part of the problem will get better as the crime will be reported on a national basis.
Yeah,
is there
national
some kind of hotline number that drivers can call? Has that been established?
In most cases, drivers would be encouraged to work with their carrier or shipper.
Local state law enforcement, basically.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But there is not 1-800 number nationwide where somebody could call in, but
in the magazine there I put several regional law enforcement contacts for some of these task forces that specialize in this, And those guys are really good for just kind of networking with localities, I mean, local law enforcement in their region. And they're pretty helpful. All the ones I talked to did suggest that they're open to taking calls for sure about incidents.
Okay, and this issue is a September issue of Truckers News Magazine that you can pick up at nearly just about any truck stop across the country. But, you know, I look at this thing, how big of a problem this is. I kind of relate it to the war on drugs. I mean, is this problem so big it's going to be similar to that? I mean, you think they're really going to be able to tackle this thing and squeeze it down at all?
Well, the difference between the current current situation with drug crime and cargo theft crime is partly the defining the crime in the FBI code that Max was talking about, and in the penalties. You know, I mean, drug crimes. You sell it. I had one of the Memphis cargo theft guys put to me. You know, he, like sell like a small amount of cocaine on the streets in Mississippi, and you know, get 10 to 20 years in parchment, state prison, and, you know, still a $200,000 load of whatever, and you might get 2 years probation and a fine of $2,000.
Wow.
The penalties aren't there. I don't know what do you think, Max? Do you see, like, I kind of don't see it going quite to the extreme of the way that drug crimes are prosecuted in terms of penalties, but I do know that that national task force that we mentioned in the story, which is kind of almost like a lobby, you know, mm-hmm. to really get tough on cargo theft on Congress and in federal government as well.
Well, yeah, that's one of the things
they talk about. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. They want to. One of the lawyers I talked with in the story is interested in putting a defining name to the crime and coming up with some stiffer penalties for it. I think
minimum sentencing, right?
Yeah, exactly. And also, we haven't mentioned this, but sort of alluded to the fact that food is I think become the leading, if not the number one target for a lot of these thieves. And one of the proposals that the one lawyer was talking about is trying to put a tripling of the sentence on any theft that involves food or pharmaceuticals because of the health issues and also because of the possibility that maybe there could be a terrorist invasion through the food supply.
Go ahead. Oh, I was just saying, like poisoning the food supply, like you had mentioned in your article there.
Yeah. So there's some movement along those lines. Although moving through Washington sometimes take a long, long time, and there are a lot of other priorities ahead of that. But those are things that they recognize that the laws on the books really don't fit the economic impact of this. So they're trying to do something about it.
I have a question in regards to that. It stuck out in my mind when I read the part about the insulin, the painted insulin. And what I thought was, you know, the people of opportunity are not just the thieves, but it's also those who think they're going to get a reduction and they can therefore increase their bottom line by saving all this money buying these hot items. And I think that's a part that needs to be targeted also, because if no one is buying these items, then the opportunists will no longer, you know, find it profitable for them. And what I found I couldn't figure it out. Here you have a pharmaceutical, a drugstore, and don't they know they're buying hot insulin?
Well, It's hard to say because you don't know the sources of their supplies of different pharmaceutical products. And we're not talking about the CVS's and the Walgreens of the world, but we're talking about the more the mom and pop drugstores and things like that. And so I don't think they are out buying hot products like this. They may be going through supply chain locations that they've used in the past, and who knows where they are getting their supplies sometimes. It's somewhat of a murky area there, I think, as far as these problems happening, but they can happen because there are cracks in the system, certainly.
Yeah. Okay, well, listen, gotta take a quick break, and when we come back, let's talk about the Federal Uniform Crime Reporting Program and how these cargo theft investigators work these cases. All right, we'll be back in 2.5 minutes.
The trucker lifestyle isn't an easy one, and those of you listening will testify to that. Because of the sedentary lifestyle, one of the major problems causing drivers to be at greater health risk is obesity. I'm Alan Smith of Truth About Trucking Live, and recently there's been concern for the professional CDL driver and their ability to pass the DOT physical. No doubt you've been hearing terms such as BMI index, sleep apnea testing, and CPAP machines. The bottom line to all of this, however, is that drivers may lose their jobs because they're overweight. Most of these drivers, by paying attention to their diet and calorie intake along with some exercise, can take care of their weight problem. But many others, however, are 100 pounds or more overweight, and the problem seems overwhelming to them. These drivers are now researching other alternatives such as gastric sleeve surgery, which would limit their intake of large quantities of food. The cost of gastric surgeries in the U.S. are between $18,000 and $35,000, and not all insurance will cover these costs. We've discovered that one of the most recognized, respected, and affordable facilities who perform this kind of surgery with a total cost of $9,500 is located in Mexicali, Mexico, only 22 miles south of El Centro, California. Dr. Alberto Aceves has performed thousands of surgeries and is rated among one of the highest success rates anywhere, including the U.S. Dr. Aceves has impeccable credentials, including member of the American Society for Bariatric and Metabolic Surgery, member of the International Federation for the Surgery of Obesity, and member of FACS, the American College of Surgeons. If you're overweight and you're contemplating gastric sleeve surgery as a possible solution, either because you're concerned about your job or you just want to feel good about yourself or do things you haven't done in years, then I encourage you to give Dr. Alberto Aceves and his staff a call. They have an extremely knowledgeable, personable, and professional staff and will tell you if you're a candidate for this type of procedure. They'll answer your questions and concerns, and if you're not a candidate, they'll tell you, guiding you in another direction. You can contact them toll-free at 888-344-3916 or at their website, MexicaliBariatricCenter.com.
Okay, back with Todd Dills of Truckers News and Max Cavedra of Randall Riley Publishing on the problem of truck cargo theft. 347-826-9170 is our number. Let's grab a caller here real quick as we move along. Caller from Illinois, area code 312. Go ahead, you're on the air.
How you doing? This is actually the attorney that Max was referring to earlier. This is Jerry Palmer from Illinois here.
Oh, okay. Welcome to the show.
How you doing? You talked about before about having the ability for a driver to call an 800 number in case there was a theft report.
Uh-huh.
There is such a thing now. An organization called CargoNet, based out of Jersey City, New Jersey, which is a partnership between the National Insurance Crime Bureau, which also contributed to some of the information in the story that Max was talking about before. So National Insurance Crime Bureau, along with this group called CargoNet, have collaborated together to create this national database. And one of the programs that they're rolling out right now is giving drivers these basically 1-800 number to call to report a theft, you would have to capture your VIN number and things of that nature. But that information would then go into the national database and kind of given out to law enforcement agents throughout the country to investigate that crime, almost on a BOLO kind of blast email.
Oh, okay. You have that 800 number, I take it.
Yeah, so there's a free call-in number for anyone who's an owner-operator or a member of the CargoNet, and obviously they're trying to get people to join this. It is a paid service for certain individuals, and I'm not sure if it's paid for everyone who's a victim of a crime. I still think you can report a crime even if you're not a member. The members get other benefits and other analytics as part of their membership. But for the non-membership, I do believe there's the ability for anyone who has a theft to report it. And it is a free number to call in, and that information is then given to law enforcement that are part of the network and the system.
Okay. Do you have the 800 number?
I don't. I will.
I think I have it here.
Oh, do you have it? Okay. But it, okay.
I think I just found it. Anyway, give me a moment.
Okay. And that's with the CargoNet.
Yep.
Jared.
Yes.
Hi, Jared. This is Max Kavedra. Has there been any progress on the legislation, proposed legislation you mentioned about higher penalties for food and pharmaceuticals?
It seems like we always have the worst timing to go to Congress and ask for legislation to get put through. So I don't know when a good timing is going to be, but we're going to keep pushing. We still have dialogue between various congressmen and senators who have shown interest in our cause. Including Secretary of Transportation LaHood and his office. So we're still pushing ahead. You know, the UCR thing that the feds just pushed through, that got signed into law in 2006, and that just happened in 2010. And
right.
So
it takes a while.
4 years just to get a code update in the federal crime reporting system. So it's, you know, things don't move as quickly as we like necessarily on the federal level, but we're still making progress. We got our summit coming up in October. Which we intend to have, again, government, law enforcement, private sector, insurance, supply chain people all there. So we're keep pushing, and I think the numbers you'll see at the attendance reflect the fact that this is such a big problem and that people are now starting to be alert and informed as to how it affects us as consumers.
Well, yeah.
We had a question.
Talking $30 billion here. Todd, you have that number?
Yeah, I think this is probably the one. It's on the CargoNet website, but it's for law enforcement, I think.
Okay.
It's 800-447-6282, and then extension 7002.
1-800-447-6682.
6282. I'm sorry.
6282 extension 7002. Okay. All right. Well, thanks for the call. Listen, Todd, also, let's talk about, I guess, what this reporting thing we were talking about earlier, the Federal Uniform Crime Reporting Program. Is that what we're touching? What's this thing all about?
Well, that's the code update that Jared was just talking about. And actually, is he still on the line by chance?
Yeah, let me pull him up here. Yeah, he's back on.
I'm still here.
Good. I had a question about the UCR update. Basically, it's Alan, to answer your question, it's basically federally defining the crime of cargo theft. You know, before it was reported as various other things. It could be a burglary, it could be a auto theft, it could be, you know, grand larceny. But now there's a federal definition of it. And what I was wondering, Jared, from your perspective, is do you have any idea about how quickly we can expect for local and state agencies to begin actually reporting cargo theft? I mean, does the information about the update to the UCR get out very quickly, or is it kind of a gradual type thing?
Yeah, I mean, you have every state police agency or law enforcement has a different reporting system. Florida has a reporting system. Texas has a different reporting system. And so they all have to tweak their systems and have a programmer come in, update the program, train all law enforcement personnel who are going to be entering that data into the system how to enter it correctly, And that takes time and money away from their, you know, their current routines, their current jobs. So until there's funding to, you know, an IT person to go and specially program these things and get them all to communicate on the same channel, it's going to be a process. And last time I checked, our states are all not doing so well financially. And so you're going to have a lot of delay in this process. And I think that's what Max mentioned in the article. We call it a hiccup. You know, it is a bit of a hiccup to do this, because now that the Fed said it's okay to receive the information, the states don't have the resources to send it. So it's not a major hurdle, but it is one that still exists that we still have to overcome.
Now, as part of what you guys do there in Washington, I think Scott Cornell is one of the guys you work with, right? In the National Task Force.
Yeah, Scott Cornell is on the he works for Travelers Investigative Unit.
Right.
They have a special unit within the Travelers Insurance Company that investigates crime, cargo-related crime. One of the few insurance companies that take it to that level. So yeah, Scott Cornell is one of the members of our task force. He represents the side. Yeah.
He described what you guys one of the things you guys were doing was sort of stress the need for, you know, implementation of the UCR in that state and local level. And is it is part of that, like, is there a chance that there may be some federal money that would be granted to states to help in this, or is that that just kind of guessing?
Well, that's what we're trying to do, and
okay.
That's why we're, you know, approach this from every angle. I mean, you know, the transportation area of our country, in terms of financing and funding right now, they keep talking about infrastructure, doing the roads and bridges, especially after what happened in Minnesota a few years ago with the bridge collapse. So,
yeah.
You know, there's this money that even though right now it's emergency relief money that's out there, we're trying to get a carve out from somewhere, and we're looking for there, because there is a lot of money that gets allocated out of that funding to different safety and transportation-related endeavors. We're trying to grab a piece of that, even though this really should probably come from the Justice Department or someone in that jurisdiction. But we're trying to carve a piece from anyone that's willing to give us a piece, basically, that has funding to help pay for this system upgrade, the training, even though the National Insurance Crime Bureau, part of their services with their connection with law enforcement, is willing to train people to get them to use the new system. There's still time out of people's days that have to be done, and there's still resources that have to be allocated, and there's costs involved in that. So, yes, that is part of our mission when we go to D.C. again in October, is to have someone put pen to paper and actually agree to give us a carve-out from whatever source is necessary to pay for these things.
Cool. Yeah, I was curious about that.
Yeah, there's always...
Well, and the importance of this, too, is that... I think Washington and a lot of states depend on statistics to help them define problems. Isn't that right, Jared? And so if the statistics aren't there about how bad the crime is, then they might be more reluctant to give money or grants or whatever the source might be. But if the crimes are reported on a consistent basis, so that legislators and other people and bureaucrats can see what the problem is, then they might be more sympathetic to this.
No, that's correct. I just got an update. I want to answer that question in a second. The phone number that we were talking about before, I have an update on the phone number. It is 888-595-2683. I don't know if that was different than the number you were given before, but from the director of CargoNet, I just got a text. So it's 888-595-2683 is the phone number that people can call in on.
Great.
Garrett, on their website, that phone number is there too, but it's 2638.
Yeah, that's the number he's telling me for people to use to call in. Regarding
okay, let me get it straight here. 888-595-2683?
That is correct.
Okay,
well,
so...
I would say on the website it's not 2683, it's 2638. I'm not sure if he's got it wrong or if he texted it wrong by accident or what.
He might have texted me wrong. I think he just got another text. So
okay.
The website. Yeah, you got it right. He switched the last two numbers. Correct.
Yeah. 2638. Everybody. Yeah.
Okay. The call in number to report a cargo theft crime: 888-595-2683.
2638. So, well, listen, Max, I want to get in here real quick. We're running out of time. How do these cargo theft investigators work these cases?
Todd, why don't you grab that one, because you were working with one directly. I mean, I would have a couple comments, but go ahead.
Well, there's all manner of taxis. I mean, it's a thing that a crime that they've been that has been reported to them very fast, and they get information about it very quickly. Say there's a trailer that has been reported stolen, and the carrier has a tracking device on it, or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
They may just work directly with the carrier and get the pings from that tracking device and follow it to where it goes, or find it out on the road and pull whoever's moving it over. That's a simple case. A lot of times, though, they don't get information quickly as they would like, so so then it becomes difficult, of course, because one of the big things that a lot of the detectives stressed over and over is sort of the need for speed in terms of reporting this stuff to them and getting information about the crimes to the right people, because of course the cargo is mobile, obviously. Wait a couple hours, a few hours, it could be a couple states over. So,
if it has a tracking device, that kind of makes it easier. But if it doesn't, I guess it's just good old footwork investigative.
Exactly.
I mean, you just go back to the old school.
It is. I mean, it's very much just going to the scene, asking folks, asking questions. Again, speed, knowing that helps. Speed of information reporting helps in that regard. Obviously, folks in New Jersey told me about a load of I think it was cell phones or something that was stolen from a truck stop, and they got the information pretty quickly. There's no tracking device on it or anything. The detective went down to the truck stop where it was stolen. Because they got there quickly, everybody who was in the truck stop lot was still there. Or most people anyway. And the driver was pointing to the spot where his truck and trailer were, and saying, yeah, that's where it was sitting right there. And detective goes up to the door of the driver that's parked right next to him, and he knocks on the window, and he says, hey, you see anything weird going on over here? There's a truck with a big, had an Indian or something on the side of him. He's like, oh, yeah, I saw that. And then he pointed down to the driver who had reported the stolen load, and he said, yeah, and that guy was waving bye to me. So waving bye to the driver as he left. So in that case, he was probably approached by another guy, and it didn't go so well this time. But
All right.
And also in some cases, law enforcement groups do what might be considered sting operations.
Yes.
They might have a sense of a local group or individuals who are running, theft operations. And, so they'll set up a cargo and a trailer and, spread the word that, it's available or some information is passed around. And, that's worked effectively. I believe it was in Georgia, the group there, the task force in Georgia in Atlanta and the surrounding communities have been very effective in using operations like that to nab quite a few of these thieves in that area.
And that's a good tactic for sort of infiltrating and identifying the patterns of repeat offenders.
Yeah.
People who do this for a living and they're out there doing it all the time. If I'm not mistaken, Max, it's not actually a crime to take a take a planted float because it doesn't really belong to anybody or something like that?
Well, that was one of these gray areas that was discussed. Okay. It may have been by may have been mentioned by Jared Palmer, but they're trying to get that straightened out because the cargo is not actually in interstate commerce, and the trailer is not in interstate commerce either,
right,
because it has been set up for this purposes. But I don't know of any situations where that defense has worked.
Well, in New Jersey, I was going to say in New Jersey, what they have had on the New Jersey cargo, the state cargo theft unit, quite a lot of experience. Been around for a long time. Kind of a unique situation out there in the state, but they have been using a sting trailer on loan from Travelers Insurance and their investigative unit that Jared and I were talking about a little bit before recently, and they've used it to effect I don't know if they've had anybody take it, but I think that they've used planted trailers with tracking devices to lead them to storage facilities where they end up finding other stolen loads, you know,
mm-hmm.
in pieces.
Okay.
At that point, warehouses where they're being stored, waiting for sale somewhere. Or whatever.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, listen, I got to let's take a quick sponsor break, and when we come back, Donna, I'll get to your question, and then we're running out of time here. Let's focus on the solution to this big problem within the U.S. trucking industry. So be right back, and back in 1 minute.
Sounds good.
Hey, everybody. Alan Smith here with Truth About Trucking Live on Blog Talk Radio. Have you been driving a big rig for a while now and considering starting your own business as an owner-operator? Well, Lone Mountain Truck Leasing offers the best lease purchase plan in the industry. With a small down payment and monthly payments around $1,000 or less, you make the monthly payment, and when the final payment is made, they hand over the title. It really is that simple. There is no big balloon payment at the end, and secondly, the truck is yours, not a lease plan under one trucking company. So if becoming an owner-operator is your goal, do it the right way. Do it the best way. Contact Lone Mountain Truck Leasing on the web at lonemountaintruck.com or give them a call toll-free at 866-512-5685. That's lonemountaintruck.com. And be sure to tell them that you heard about them on Truth About Trucking Live.
All right, we've been talking about the problem of cargo theft in the trucking industry. Now, what about the solution? But Donna, I heard you try to get in there. You had a question?
Yeah. Hi, Max. Hi, Don. I have a question. Chris, the light bulb was going off in my head when they started talking about the transportation and infrastructure, and I started tying things together, and I want to ask you, as far as drivers go, because a lot of our audience is drivers tonight, and as far as them being targeted, I'm reading here that truck stops, carrier facilities, parking lots, rest areas are the main concern. And one of the concerns that we have is the rest areas are closing up through many of the states because mm-hmm. of the budgets that the states, you know, can't handle them and so forth. And that's part of what you're probably familiar with Jason's Law is more increased safe parking. Now,
sure.
Do you find a correlation between this cargo theft and if more rest areas are closed up, that the drivers would be even a greater chance to be a target for this cargo theft?
I don't know if there's a direct correlation, but it makes it more difficult. That there's no doubt about it. When, you know, I talk with truckers all the time who are complaining that, you know, unless you get to a certain truck stop by a certain time, you aren't going to find space. And you have to keep moving on to someplace else or find a less desirable place to park. And that's not good for them or their load, potentially.
Right.
Yeah, I feel like there is a correlation for sure. I mean, Because, you know, you think about it in aggregate, you know, the fewer parking facilities there are where you're parked in mass, a lot of trucks around, you know, a lot of activity in a large parking lot, and hopefully, you know, it's a somewhat secure parking lot. The fewer parking spaces that are there, the more likely there's going to be trailers parked in strange places, you know. And these lone trucks parked in strange places are you know, immediate targets for cargo theft for sure. The guys in Memphis gave me several anecdotes where it was like that kind of situation. Guy couldn't find a spot in the lot, or he's parking in a strange place because he must be able to get his home or something like that. And you know, that happens just like that. But I think there's a definite correlation.
Right. Okay. Well, we're going to talk about that later, but this is a very big concern of ours for the truck drivers. Safety, you know that with the Jason Reisenberg murder and everything. And when I'm reading your notes here and it says truck stops and rest areas, and I'm thinking to myself, well, if any more of these rest areas close up, this could be an actual, you know, okay, let's hit those drivers, those trailers. They're all alone. And, you know, they're pretty much defenseless unless they carry or something, you know.
Well, and I think we will probably see more privately funded, secure trucking facilities created. There's one fellow who has a long background in security industry has started a couple of facilities. I believe there's one in Texas, and he has plans for others around the country. This will take time and certainly takes money, but I know there are several carriers that are arranging to have their drivers and trailers parked, if they're in the vicinity, certainly, parked at these facilities. And there are very elaborate security precautions and systems set in place. So I think we will see more of that type of thing because we're not going to be seeing more truck stops built anytime soon. And as you mentioned, the number of rest stops nationally is declining, it seems. So they'll have to be more secure parking spaces in some place.
Yeah, and I think in some instances it's even carriers kind of working their operations down to like providing their own parking for all their own trucks.
Exactly.
I know that in the story we write a little bit about Evans Delivery, which is based up in the Northeast City Low Container Movement. A lot of their hauls are short enough to where they can get most of the drivers back in one day, but I do believe they have facilities across the country, and they've done a lot of work beefing up security at them. They've kind of reduced, I think they had something like 18 or 16 theft incidents in 2008, and then they started doing these different operational things where they could get drivers to their secure facilities more readily. They supplied a lot of their owner operators with bar locks on the back of their trucks and the air cuff locks as well for the tractor. I think they've only had, last time I talked to them anyway, one incident this year. So I mean that's pretty significant.
Okay, so this is some of the solutions anyway. Let's grab some callers here before we run out of time from Ohio, area code 330. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Alan Smith, good evening.
How you doing?
I'm all right. This is Overtime, or Matt. I got some questions.
Okay.
Focus on, this does focus around Jason's Law and the safety of not only the drivers, but the freight. We all know that, you know, the freight that we haul, we ain't going to do anything stupid. The majority of us anyway ain't going to do anything stupid because we feel that once that freight is on our vehicle, on our equipment, we own that freight from point A to point B. Okay, that is my property as well as the carrier's property.
Right.
But the problem also goes to try to get this wrapped up with and to get the senators and everything to back us even more onto this. I've spoken to several here in my own state. And so far what I've gotten back as far as feedback is to get the general public more involved in more safer places for not only drivers but transportation, you know, travelers as well. I mean, I pulled into truck stops. I know Alan has, and the other drivers. When you pull into a truck stop and it's not just jam packed full of, you know, rigs, but it's jam packed full of commuters, okay, commuters and travelers, mm-hmm. with travelers. I mean, that alone can show you, Alan. We also need to get the general public involved in it. The senators were kind of pointing out to me that in this Jason's Law Act. Somewhere, don't just limit it to us commercial carriers, okay? Because it's kind of he kind of went over it with me, and he says this kind of just pinpoints carriers and commercial vehicles. In order to get more backing on this for safer, secure parking lots, you know, as far as a statewide goes, we dang sure need the public involved. In order to get the senator to jump into this, we need to bring them into it. So I'm not trying to, like, play the devil's advocate, but somehow in this bill we need to somehow focus not only on driver safety, but, listen to me, the security of the customer's freight, my customer's freight, and everyone else's customer's freight, and also general travelers or commuters as well.
I absolutely agree with you.
Yeah.
I mean, this is something we've been trying to say, and Todd himself tonight said there definitely is a correlation between the safe parking and these cargo thefts. That's just one aspect of it. The tremendous need for more safe parking, especially since these rest areas are closing down. Now there's cargo theft. And if I'll tell you what, if Jason Rivenberg could be shot for $7, you have to wonder when you have $100,000 or more dollars worth of stuff on your trailer. So, you know, I see a direct correlation with all this too. And we're doing our best. We're all in there calling and trying to get HR 2156 passed. So
yeah, and definitely, and I mean. More than $100,000. I mean, I've hauled loads, worth $1 or $2 million. So definitely gets up there in the money. Caller from Georgia, area code 7006. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Hey, this is David. Great show.
Oh, hey, David. I'm good. How you doing?
All right. I asked my question whether. Correlation was with nowhere to park, whether they were, this was leading to more thefts. The other question I had, does NAFTA, what's going on with NAFTA, lead more to the thefts going in and across the borders?
Well, that's a good question, Todd. I mean, y'all's magazine covers a lot of stuff. What's your thoughts on that?
Max, what do you think? I'm thinking about that here for a minute.
certainly there are rigs and cargo that is going across the border that has been stolen.
Right now with the situation at the border the way it is kind of a hot spot for theft due to all the transloading that goes on down there.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to there's a lot of freight coming through all these little choke points, so it's like, it's high density, Laredo and some of the bigger crossings and such, but, I don't know about, how the change on the border would affect it. That's something that I've not thought a lot about. I could sort of speculate, but that wouldn't probably get us anywhere. I'd probably just ramble on for a while.
Yeah, that NAFTA's still a hot topic, and
Right.
I don't know what's going to happen with that. They keep saying they're going to make a statement any day now, and
mm-hmm.
I've been hearing that for 2 years. So that's just such a hot topic here. Caller from Delaware, Patches, I believe, area code 302. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Hey, good evening there, Alan.
Hey, good evening. How you doing?
Well, it could be better, could be worse.
What's going on
with these questions and stuff, yes, Jason's Law does go back into this theft thing. It goes to the priority and safety. Not just on the driver, it goes into the safety of the product being hauled. And as you said, Alan, I've hauled loads of, good God, I'd hate to say what the prices are on.
The
back of these trailers, if a driver does not utilize them properly and use the proper kind of lock, yes, they can get into them trailers in a heartbeat. Other thing is, like one person said here on the page here, a lot of drivers just get out and don't lock their doors.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And that's a big no-no. No matter when you get out of that, you should lock them doors, regardless.
Yeah.
There is other things. That's just a logical deterrent, Todd and Max. But we know you've mentioned a few things what the carriers can do and might do, but what's some of the other solutions that drivers can do? I mean,
owner operators can do all that stuff. And drivers too. In terms of the locking mechanism, there's the air cuff lock, which basically engages your air brakes. It's kind of like the club for big rigs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it engages the air brakes, so you can't move. And if you get it off, like to disable it, you're gonna break the air brake controllers, and so you're not gonna be able to drive it away. But the trailer, since we're talking about owner-operator owns this trailer, and some of the carriers are supplying these in cases where pulling a carrier trailer, there are the adjustable bar locks which go across the back doors of a box trailer, container, or a van, and then there are also kingpin locks.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. And which just sort of prevent you from backing into it. But also, some of the law enforcement guys that I talked to did note that there are some of those that they're finding ways around those, basically.
There's a landing gear lock
as well.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, these kind of things drivers have been doing for years anyway. I think the large part is going to be, and the GPS system has helped a great deal, but I think a large part the carrier is going to have to play a bigger part in this. And I guess, I don't know, what are some of the things that they can do other than providing parking and things like that?
Well, a lot of the carriers are certainly paying attention to this. Then they are doing things such as placing tracking devices within the trailer and sometimes within the load if they have agreements with the shippers. They can do more training, I think, and a lot of them are, with their drivers about, not only providing security products to use on the trailer and the truck, but I think we hear in the reporting for this story that in some cases there were drivers who left their truck running and this doesn't happen very often, but there's still incidents of this taking place like this. And another thing too, some of the drivers I talked with who this has not happened to, they are very conscious of their vehicle, of their equipment, of their loads, and they are constantly checking on it. They'll walk around their vehicle anytime they stop, whether it's to fuel up or taking a nap or whatever it happens to be. They are checking out their trailer just, you know, because they have a lock on it, or they have some device on there, and they'll check to see if anything is different about it. And it doesn't take very long to do this, to check out what you have, but it's just a sense of being aware of what you have, and the fact that there are bad people out there who would love to get your load. A lot of it too is planning on your trip, so that once you load up, you're in a position where you're not going to be making a stop right away.
Yeah.
That you've taken care of your bathroom needs and your food, and you're fueled up and you're ready to go for a long distance and a long time. So that if somebody is following you and expecting you to be stopping sometime soon, they're not going to be targeting you if you're going for, you know, a few hours and several hundred miles like that. So that's one thing, to be prepared to hit the road and to be on the road, certainly within your legal boundaries. Things like that. It's,
well, Donna, you know, you and I were talking earlier, you know, we were saying, you know, the driver is really the driver is the main deterrent of crime out there. But I still say, you know, if somebody comes up there and, you know, your life's threatened, they want that load, you know, no need to play hero, you know, let them have that freight.
Yeah, I know, we talk about guns and this and that, but,
that's what insurance is for.
The cargo thefts in most cases is not armed hijacking.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
True.
Because basically when that happens, when you introduce a weapon into it, then the stiff penalties are there. You know, these guys don't want the stiff penalties, you know, if they happen to get caught. So there are some, I mean, you hear about some of the armed hijackings out there of rigs for sure, but I think the vast majority of it is kind of nonviolent crimes. Well, fortunately or unfortunately, of course, but
they don't want confrontation. They're going to watch until that driver's away, you know, because they don't want confrontation. They, you know, exactly like you're saying, Todd. So they know the stricter penalties and everything. Kind of like burglaries, they wait till the people's out of the house before they go in.
Yeah.
And here I had a thought about carriers and what they can do and what individual drivers can do, and that's it was the example of that the company I mentioned earlier, Evans Delivery. They started doing some of the things that they did to sort of reduce the theft incidents they had. One of the things they did was including all of their drivers, all their owner operators, leased them on these Be on the Lookout. Jared mentioned the Bolo blast, Be on the Lookout list.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they would send these to drivers, and, you know, the drivers can look at them or not, but basically by including folks in on it, I mean, basically it just kind of heightened the awareness of, like, look, this stuff is happening. It's happening all the time. It's out there, you know. We're all dealing with it as we can, just, you know, be aware of it. So it's sort of, I think it within the company, you know, with everybody involved in that company, it kind of made, kind of changed, it kind of made, like, the whole security thing a part of, like, just the way that they did business. And
right.
Just by doing that, I'm sure it had some kind of positive effect.
Well, and another thing I'm hearing, too, among carriers, they are working more closely with shippers as far as timing of pickups and deliveries, so that a driver is not stuck with picking up a load on a Friday and has no hope of being able to deliver it before Monday. So you have that whole weekend where the driver is responsible for a load where he has nowhere to go, essentially, safe.
Right.
And so I think more carriers and shippers are timing these things so that if there is a Friday pickup, it's going to be someplace that can be delivered on that same day. And if it's going to be for an over the weekend, it's going to be maybe held off until the following Monday, or maybe it's picked up on a Thursday, so that they can avoid that, or maybe even going to Saturday hours in some cases, depending on what the cargo is too. So there is cooperation going on, I think, in some places.
Well, that is, which brings up another problem, which is a lot of times drivers aren't allowed to park in the parking lots before their delivery.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of drivers are really upset about that. You know, if you have an appointment and, you know, you get there early so you could be on time and you're not allowed to park, with all this going on, I think there should be some consideration as an active role they could be playing to prevent this kind, these kinds of occurrences.
Yeah.
I think that's where the carriers can be working more closely with shippers and maybe even cooperating among themselves so that if there's space at another carrier's secure facility, that maybe another carrier's driver can spend some time there if that's possible.
And not, you know, of course, not sending a driver who's almost out of hours to pick up a load.
Yep.
When he has nowhere to go afterward, you know, so, yeah.
Well, at least they're looking at it, and spreading the days out like that, like you were talking about, is good, because I know that even certain days of the week are higher in this kind of crime. So.
Oh, yeah, the weekends are far and away.
Yeah, one thing to look at. So, but, okay, well, we're wrapping up the time here. Todd Dills of Truckers News Magazine and Max Cavidra of Randall Riley Publishing. Thanks for being here. Great show.
Yeah.
Well, I enjoyed it, Alan.
Yeah.
I did too. A lot of good information. Todd, your websites again for our listeners?
Oh, overdriveonline.com. That's Overdrive Magazine and Truckers News. Where the cargo theft story is truckersnews.com. And then I blog at Channel 19 blog, overdriveonline.com/Channel 19.
Yeah, that's a good blog, too. I'm on there a lot. Max, I didn't give a website for you. Did you have a website you want to give out?
No, I'm not blogging. Todd does a great job on that, but I do several stories on owner-operators for Truckers News, so maybe I'll be doing that in the future.
You need to get on Twitter and Facebook, Max.
I think you're right. The pressure's mounting. I know.
Oh, well, be careful, Max. You'll get addicted like my wife. So, thanks for being here. We'll have to do this again.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Thanks a lot for the invitation.
Thank you.
All right. And like I said, Truckers News pick up at just about any truck stop across the country. So good show. That was enjoyable and a lot of good information. Don, I got a few minutes here, and then I want to get to the closing thing here for our for our men and women in uniform, but you had some announcements?
Yes, I do. And actually, it kind of all wraps up with the show in a way. We have our September 15th call-in for the Jason's Law call-in is what it is. Hope Rivenberg will be going up to Washington for her third, I believe it's her third trip. It might be her fourth. And what it's for is for the bill H.R. 2156 to be passed into law, which Congressman Paul Tonko introduced back in April of 2009. It's been sitting in committee. There's not much being done with it. And after this show tonight, I'm just thinking, wow, this is a bill every driver listening tonight needs to realize how important to have more safe truck parking. How it is. I'm going to just read to you a little bit that I typed up before. Hope Rivenberg is planning another trip to Washington on September 15th to again meet the representatives going door-to-door for co-sponsors of H.R. 2156 and 971. Since the death of her husband, Jason Rivenberg, last March, she has been working closely with Congressman Paul Tonko of New York State in attempts to get Jason's Law passed. The bill calls for a 20-million-year pilot program over 6 years to address the severe shortage of parking, which exists in many areas of the United States. The funds used for this program will be used from the collected fuel tax and will not require any further increase in taxes.
That's important.
Yeah, that's a point I want to get across to everybody because, you know, they just think it's another slush fund. More and more rest areas are closing because of state deficits, which means the lack of safe and adequate truck parking is going to get worse. The major argument we hear, and actually the only argument, is that government should not get involved. Well, here's the answer. The government is already involved by the collection of fuel tax. What Jason's Law would do is allocate a portion of these funds towards maintaining rest areas that are already there or creating rest areas, especially in the states that are severely short of parking. It is presently stuck in the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee, the Highways and Transit Subcommittee, and we're calling on all of you listening to call your representatives. For over a year now, Hope, through her grief, has been making numerous trips to Washington on behalf of truck drivers. She sacrifices her own time and money for the sake of others' safety. So many organizations say they're for Jason's Law. However, more than lip service is needed right now for this law to pass. Alan and I and a group of very hardworking individuals are asking drivers from all over this country to show your support to Hope Rivenberg and what she is trying to accomplish for you. All you have to do is make one phone call to your representative. It will take some effort on your part. You may have to look up the number. Just type in Google how to find state representatives, and it's 1, 2, 3. Compared to the sacrifices that Hope is making, which includes her expenses and time, this is a very small thing to do. It will show your appreciation, as it may save your life or someone you know. The national call-in day is September 15th. However, from now till then, we're asking you to call your reps. The national call-in day is to call Senator Schumer's office, and that's because he has Bill 971 that he also introduced, and we'll be explaining more about this day on the blog and in a press release that will be released shortly. I think this whole show just all ties in with it, don't you, Alan? I mean, I also have that other announcement about the trafficking.
Well, we've got a couple minutes here. You have the numbers to give out?
I have 202-224-6542. That's Senator Schumer's office. That's for the 15th. And you call your senators and reps anytime you want. Well, I also have another announcement.
Okay, 2 minutes.
Okay, for truckers against trafficking, they have their webinars. The human trafficking rings are in an area that truckers can be most helpful. Much of the prostitution you see in the truck stops are organized by human traffickers, kidnapping young girls, those from other countries brought to the United States in promise of a better life are some examples of the horror and tragedy that's involved here. There is a hotline if you see unusual behavior. It's 1-888-373-7888, and just to let you know that recently one trucker did, and he saved 9 lives while convicting 31 offenders in 13-state prostitution ring, and that's because he observed something that just didn't look right. So we'll have more about that in a future show on that.
Okay, sounds good. Yeah, important stuff. So, all right. Well, thanks, everybody, for being here. But before we
You know, I get a lot of emails from people all over the world, emails and letters from North and South America and several continents. And I really enjoy reading these writings from people I'll probably never meet. But I've been receiving emails from time to time from a staff sergeant in the U.S. military serving over in the Middle East. And at times I'll get an email from him once a week, and sometimes 2 or 3 months will go by and I'll not hear a thing. Well, yesterday morning at 3:15 a.m., I got another email from him, and he even apologized for being so long in writing, but as you can imagine, he's pretty busy over there. And his tour of duty and others and their enlistment is coming to an end, and they're considering truck driving as a career when they make it back home here in the U.S. And whenever I get these emails from those soldiers serving in Iraq and Afghanistan, I always stop to consider that here I am doing my little thing here in Florida, and then there are those in uniform who wake up every day not knowing if that day will be their last. Well, this evening on Truth About Trucking Live, I wanted to pay some kind of tribute to our soldiers, so I want to play a song from When the Big Rigs Don't Roll music CD, one that you might not have even heard yet. And if you haven't gotten your copy of the CD, I would urge you to do so. You can get your copy of the CD right from the music player on our blog at AskTheTrucker.com. And between now and September 15th, every purchase will provide a $3 donation to the family of Jason Rivenberg for the Jason's Law Fund. Just go to AskTheTrucker.com, and near the top of the page, you'll see the button that reads Big Rigs Fund. Just click on it there and follow the links to the Jason Law Fund. So for the staff sergeant and all those others serving over in Iraq and Afghanistan, just wanted to do something a little special tonight. And so we're going to play this song as a tribute and an honor for them. So with that, we pay tribute to the staff sergeant and all the men and women in uniform fighting for a people's freedom and doing it all for liberty.
An Eastwood smile crinkled his eyes. You know the kind I mean. He was chiseled, strong steel, a trained Navy SEAL. But he said, I'm just part of a team. He was in his dress blues, there on the news, talking about that damn war. When somebody asked about his part, what he was fighting for. He said, my country, my family, my friends, and the right to be free. I'll give all if I must to protect what is precious to me. No matter the price, I'll pay it all, and I'll do it willingly. And I won't back down, I won't give ground, all for liberty. Material things don't mean a thing. They can all be replaced. Take my car, my home, I'll get along. We all have problems we face. Then his fist clenched up tight, his knuckles went white. Said, I'll draw the line in the sand. Try to take from me one piece of liberty, it'll be out of these two dead hands. He said, my country, my family, my friends, and the right to be free. I'll give all if I must to protect what is precious to me. No matter the price, I'll pay it all, and I'll do it willingly. And I won't back down, I won't give ground, all for liberty. The crowd got up and cheered, but he couldn't stand. And I said a silent prayer for that man. I can't imagine the hell when those rockets fell, and he left part of his life there in the sand. He said, no matter the price, I'll pay it all, I'll do it willingly. And I won't back down, I won't give ground, all for liberty.
Thanks for joining us this evening on Truth About Trucking Live. You see something suspicious about cargo theft, call CargoNet, 1-888-595-2638. So for Truth About Trucking Live, I'm Alan Smith. Come home safe, and thanks for listening.